Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi everyone, my name is Brianna Contreras and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. For this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, I spoke with Ash Shehata, KPMG's National Sector Leader for Healthcare and Life Sciences. The two of us chatted about a recent paper by KPMG titled From Payer to Healthcare Partner, which highlights how the pandemic drove changes for plans to adopt a patient-centric model, and it gives a look into the 6 healthcare trends to watch for in 2021.
Hi, Ash. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Brianna. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for, taking some time out of your day to meet with me for Managed Healthcare Executives tuning into the C-Suite podcast.
Well, fantastic. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
So to get started, can you first just tell me what you do at KPMG and what's the mission of the organization?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm our national sector leader for healthcare and life sciences at KPMG. So what that basically means is I'm our industry leader. I focus on our clients and the things that are happening in the industry. And I think, from a professional services firm, we are a combination of audit, tax, and advisory professionals. We obviously focus very much on turning all of that knowledge and capability and representing our clients to help understand how information, how industries change, and certainly how we can begin to modernize our capabilities. So it really is exciting to share with you some of those thoughts today and looking forward to our discussion.
Wonderful. Thank you. So the topic of our discussion is the From Payer to Healthcare Partner paper written by KPMG. So can you tell me what inspired this this paper and what does the title of it mean, just broken down?
Yeah, thanks, Brianna. Well, it is a really very timely topic. We've obviously had a tremendous year, figuring out the pandemic, all the twists and turns. What we've looked at here is that healthcare and life sciences has been in the middle of this transformation really from day one. Obviously treating our patients, finding a cure, developing capabilities, working with governments, working with communities and families, and obviously seeing the impact, on frontline healthcare workers, really around the world. So really this idea of kind of transitioning the role of, health insurers throughout this whole journey has been something we've seen in so many places of the economy. And, as an industry professional myself, I was a former, health insurance executive. One of the things that I think the health insurance industry always prides itself on is really being close to the member and close to the providers. Mm-hmm. And obviously in this whole transformation, we've seen some amazing things like the rise of telemedicine. We've seen, the digital front door being the only front door. We've clearly seen people now focusing on their health and wellness, not only throughout the pandemic, but I think we think, for a sustainable period of time as we return back to the post-pandemic era. So I think it was a really, interesting discussion to say, as we've seen other parts of our economy change and transform, how are the payers going to also begin to transform and take the lessons learned?
Wonderful. Thank you. Now, the paper does, again, focus on how the pandemic drove those changes for plans to adopt more of the patient-centric model. So can you share possibly how the pandemic shifted KPMG's practices with clients?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the things obviously on the workplace obviously made some tremendous impacts. And I think we're just now reading more and more around how the workplace changes might be very longstanding. So people are looking at different work models, hybrid models, care delivery. You can imagine, I think right now, as we look at kind of our own environments, our own healthcare spending, people are focusing on a lot more on mental health these days. Mm-hmm. On inclusion and diversity is a major topic that we're starting to see addressed now in a very transparent manner in our communities. And we're also starting to see, I think, the kind of the return to kind of the workplace and really focusing on the things that employers want to bring to the front, of our capabilities and how we support our employees. So I think it's been a really timely, period of time that not only employers, but payers and professionals throughout the industry are kind of working together to modernize and to bring forward some of the best thinking. You know, it's interesting, healthcare and life sciences for many, many years has been modernizing, obviously moving from paper to digital and doing all these great things. But I do think, we wrote a paper years ago around healthcare 2030. And people said to us, and this was, before the decade was upon us, they said, we've got 10 years to make this transformation. Is it really going to happen in 10 years? Meaning it might take longer. I'll tell you what, after the last 18 months, it's not going to take longer. It's been accelerated. It's not going to take 10 years. We think that it might take 3 years. So now the question is going to be, how do I move into kind of hyperdrive? And how do I kind of take advantage of the momentum? How do I take advantage of this wave of consumerism that's kind of sweeping over our industry? So I think it's really exciting. And that's the part, when you kind of hear my enthusiasm, it's the enthusiasm around transforming this industry.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. And to see that, that acceleration within 3 years, that's really something to what you thought was going to be so much longer. So for the next question, so the paper highlighted six trends to watch for this year.
Yeah.
If you can share, what they are, if you can explain them and what payers should do to prepare for them. And that's a bit loaded question, but.
Yeah, I think, if we kind of just broke down the kind of the six trends a little bit, it'll be good for us to kind of just, organize them a little bit. Mm-hmm. But maybe I can kind of simplify it. Trend number one is kind of, the move towards the consumer, right? And what does that mean? Well, it means that in general, everything in our life is moving towards consumer valued behaviors. And I, just use all of our examples, buying groceries, going to your favorite, pizzeria or your local grocery shop or your local community, favorite sushi restaurant. All of those things have moved towards, kind of the digital format. Mm-hmm. So asking, I think, the first question is, what are those kind of back office things that need to be modernized? Is it my call center? Is it my web infrastructure? Is it, a variety of infrastructures that are basically serving consumers? Are they as good as they need to be? Are they as good as they can be? And are they integrating the healthcare delivery system? I think too often, as a payer, we obviously see the entire continuum from wellness to sick care. I think now there's, a kind of a really renewed emphasis on wellness. And, we've talked about new trends like mental health and looking at new trends around, factoring in people's different work environments and being able to bring care to them, not necessarily driving care to the traditional organization. So I wanted to cover a few of those trends in this consumerism topic, because it really is an important one. And it's one that I think can transform the industry, and more importantly, is going to transform the value that a payer brings to the equation. I think the second one is when we start to look at some of the newer trends like telemedicine and others, is how to make them permanent. Because a lot of times these capabilities are really embedded in a variety of places in the organization. Sometimes providers have them, sometimes payers have them. But I think it's about building, and weaving these capabilities throughout the entire continuum of care. So to me, that's a very important part of the process. And, I think when you start to think about the impacts that that could have, a health plan is not going to be about provisioning sick care anymore. It's going to be provisioning the continuity of care and working with providers differently. Many health plans are entering into all kinds of relationships with providers now. Some of them are acquiring provider systems, some of them are partnering. But the idea is how to begin to put that into kind of a new continuum of care that makes it much more accessible and transparent for the patient. I think the third area is going to see, we call it modernization. And, in order for these great things to happen, modernization needs to happen. Claim systems need to be modernized. The platforms that we communicate with our payers need to be, with our members need to be modernized. The platforms that we connect to providers need to be modernized. even things like credentialing systems need to be modernized. So all of those things that we've been kind of, you know, getting around to, all of that now is needing kind of urgent attention. So I think that's the next one. And I think the other one, when we start to think about, you know, where are some of the important trends? Things like health equity now are becoming a bigger and bigger care about. We've seen major impacts, obviously, across boards and leadership organizations around ESG. So I think health equity fits perfectly into the S part of ESG and focusing on our societal impact. And I think as health plans, you know, come out of the pandemic and obviously help sustain our providers, I think being able to focus on reinvesting in those communities and making an impact that's sustainable is going to be a top, you know, top care about. And I'd say the final one is really kind of looking at some of these newer relationships. You know, think about all of these, you know, capabilities that health plans have now. They have PBMs, they have retail capabilities. We're seeing a lot of crossover relationships, you know, between retailers and PBMs and grocery chains and others. So it's really being able to kind of rationalize those relationships in a way that's going to start to bring value. So it isn't just the payer anymore. It's the payer, the provider, the retailer, the community, and building new business relationships. And I'd say the last one that I think I'm really, really excited about is even bringing in new relationships with the tech industry. So to me, the tech industry itself is really fascinating. And you look at all the things we can learn as we move to the modern cloud, as we enable capabilities that we've never been able to enable before, as we build new relationships and partnerships, you know, tech could be the next transformative partner in the health insurance industry. So hopefully I tried to enumerate many of them without kind of getting into the stealing the luster of the written piece, but I think those are the really big careabouts.
Oh yeah, that was great. Thank you. And kind of as you already mentioned telehealth before and in tech, you know, the acceleration and expansion of it. I guess for, you know, one of those key trends you mentioned, again, telehealth, can you maybe further explain what that reevaluation is of telehealth, like what it'll look like in a post-pandemic world?
Yeah, so I think, you know, telehealth was one of those things that came upon the scene so quickly. You saw the data in the charts, right? The meteoric rise of the use of telehealth. And clearly, you know, there's been a lot of activity, a lot of acquisition, and certainly a lot of innovation. But I think the real question is going to be, where is it going to settle? That's, I think, the real kind of operative question. Is it going to be, you know, continuing this meteoric rise? Are we going to see all kinds of new technologies and capabilities? Or is it going to settle into becoming kind of a normal coordinated care practice? And I think in order to answer that question, we have to be able to address how does it become a part of the process every day? Mm-hmm. So it can't be one of those things that, you know, a provider, you know, does their busy, busy day and they step aside and do telemedicine. It has to be coordinated and harmonized, and it has to be built in. So ironically, being able to connect the telehealth visit to the entire patient care record and building that into the EHR, building continuity around it, making it truly a patient choice that they can engage these systems and it can be connected to everything they do, that is really where the future is. And that's going to take, back to my earlier point about technology, it's going to take some additional technology to be able to do that.
Right.
And it's going to take additional technology to make it sustainable and completely transparent to the user and the provider. If you were to really ask providers, they kind of have a mixed opinion about telehealth. Right. Some of them think it's the best thing, and then maybe they've transitioned much of their practice. The majority of the providers that have to live in this mixed world have a difficult time doing both. And I think payers have a very unique opportunity to help harmonize that and to make it much more tactile, make it much more approachable, and make it much more consumer friendly while being able to modernize it at the point of care. And ultimately, you're probably going to see multiple telehealth solutions. You're going to see provider-based ones, payer-based ones, retail-based ones. You might even see some that are very specialty around, for example, behavioral health. So I think the sky's the limit, but I think building that architecture for telehealth, probably one of the more important things to do right now.
Wonderful, thank you. Now, would you say, I guess for health plans and payers to adapt to a lot of these trends will be, I don't want to say difficult, but could it?
It is difficult. Yeah, I would just use telehealth, for example. So, you know, as a payer, you're usually very accustomed to building a benefit structure having a relationship with, you know, an employer, having a very defined benefit plan, right, that has very, you know, clear inputs and outputs and, you know, a relatively understood actuarial cycle. When you think about some of these new capabilities, these are direct to consumer. You can essentially stand up a telehealth environment. You can have no pre-existing relationship with a payer. You can create a commerce transaction essentially to pay for your visit. And you can essentially complete the visit without ever being connected to the plan. So as I think about this, the real opportunity for a payer is to think about how telehealth can actually be a direct-to-consumer capability. And what are the other capabilities I can bring to it? Mm-hmm. We've seen some very interesting, for example, pharmaceutical companies adapt and bring, you know, direct-to-consumer capabilities through a combination of a telehealth and a fulfillment on the back end. So being able to package two things together gives you something that's much bigger. But I do think it's going to be a heavy lift because, you know, being able to move to these direct-to-consumer capabilities is almost a new line of business. Right. It's not a traditional health plan. And we've actually seen some health plans separate and create an entity that runs their traditional health insurance business and another one that starts to build these new business opportunities with data and analytics, direct-to-consumer, pharmacy, retail. So it might be kind of a blending of two worlds for a while until we start to see how these models may actually work.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, earlier you mentioned patient engagement. As a result of, you know, these trends, do you see more of that then?
Yeah, so patient engagement has been one. It's been actually studied on both ends of the continuum, right? On the provider side through patient access, and then also certainly on the payer side. But I do think patient engagement now is almost a prerequisite as we begin to define these models. Mm-hmm. I think for many, many years, people always thought about their plan as something they go to when they need care. And clearly, and there's obviously ups and downs in people's lives. And as we get closer to, you know, a more sedentary lifestyle or retirement, you begin to use more of those services. I think the trick now with the plans is to be able to build those services throughout a lifetime of a patient. And those patient requirements and member requirements are going to vary. So when we're kind of new in our careers, maybe health and wellness and lifestyle is a big part of it, maybe even mental health. And then as we get a little bit older, being able to understand, you know, the provisioning of care, the specialty networks, the access to care, all of those things become very critical. And I'd say the other way to think about patient engagement is, you know, if we do believe in this future workforce, we're going to be in a mobile environment. So the idea of kind of sitting in our zip code and geography and leveraging a health plan is going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I know like in the past year, like many of us, you know, I've spent months of the time, you know, in different places. It's been very difficult to get things like your pharmacy, you know, being reprovisioned. Even mail order pharmacy, there's challenges around where it goes, where your mail. So imagine if people are traveling, doing things, living different lifestyles, both in pre-retirement and post-retirement. You know, being able to become kind of consumer-centered and patient-centered in the products, the design, the capabilities is going to be a stretch. And I think we're going to start to see new models emerge. And I don't think we're going to see the static models anymore of people going to offices, working in defined zip codes. But lifestyle is going to dictate, I think, the kind of, emergence of patient centricity that we expect going forward.
Definitely. Thank you. Now, kind of continuing on the subject of patient engagement and access, it was mentioned that KPMG is working with Morehouse School of Medicine to provide tech services for COVID-19 resources, yes. As well as with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to offer monoclonal antibody treatment to underserved communities during this time. Can you just touch on those partnerships and just share how that's going?
Yeah, so I think, you know, what's really exciting for us is as this all started to unfold, you know, we as a healthcare and life sciences team stepped back and said, how do we make a more meaningful impact in our communities? I mean, we represent, you know, the entire continuum, right? Healthcare and life sciences. We have amazing clients. We have amazing partners. We actually have a whole team that's very much focused on our business resource groups with helping us to really focus on underrepresented groups, you know, throughout the country. And I think what was really inspiring was when we approached our own partners and our staff and our leaders that this is something we should focus on, we got an amazing level of support, and it really ignited a lot of passion in the firm. So I'm very, very proud of the teams that have really stood up to do this. On the Morehouse project, it's been very inspiring. It started off as really helping around, making information available to underserved communities. And it was really working, obviously, across a variety of federal programs. The Morehouse School of Medicine has some amazing leaders. They really helped us understand clinically, how to be able to look at ways to access communities, put information in ways that's much more accessible. And I really think what's interesting about this, it wasn't just the starting point of really figuring out how to get COVID information out, but it was really saying, how do we build a sustainable platform to communicate, to enroll people in clinical trials, to give people access to broader levels of care? And when we started talking to different community members, we saw a lot of not-for-profit leaders come in and say, how do we become a part of this? We even saw leaders from, industries across the domain. I've spent a lot of time now with boards talking about the ESG mission and how this fits into the overall broader mission. We were able to present at the Lake Nona Innovation Forum that we co-host in our Lake Nona event. And we had a whole forum that really talked about this. And I would say it was an impassioned team of leaders that got together and really shared their ideas, their hopes, their aspirations. And I know there's going to be a follow-up on this discussion, in many more months. So it started off with COVID. It started off with figuring out how to get messages and more engagement at the community level. But I think it actually started a wave of interest and excited and high energy leaders across boards, leadership around the country. So this one, I think, is one to watch. And I'm really excited to also say that, many of our health plans have been very, very forthcoming between their leadership and their foundations to be a part of this discussion and a part of what I call a call to action. Now on the second topic, I think there have been a lot of really great insights here. We've been very fortunate, I think, to also help with, looking at different alternatives around COVID. And some of our government leaders have done a really great job of working closely with the federal government on the monoclonal antibody project. So I think more to come on that. There have been, some fantastic early releases. We've had markets like, Baltimore step up and I can have, make sure that, you guys have available all the great press releases. But I think you're going to see more and more here. So it isn't just a matter of starting the process kind of at the federal level, but more importantly, actually launching it in the community level. So I'm really, really excited and inspired about that. And I think our leaders are very much connected to what's happening in the community. And I would say what's kind of fascinating about that whole program is it's taking three constituents and working together: the government, both at the federal and local level, life sciences organizations, which are obviously pivotal in these life-saving treatments, and local delivery systems. And I think when you kind of ask yourself, when healthcare is at its best, healthcare and life sciences together are at its best, those three groups are working together diligently and purposefully to deliver the best to our communities. And I think that is probably the best example that I can see internationally of that. And hopefully we'll take some of those lessons learned and share them around the world here too.
Oh yeah, that's wonderful to hear. And I can't wait to hear more news, about both partnerships. And that's actually all I had for you, Ash. But if there's anything else, you'd like to share just about the paper or maybe any other partnerships, feel free.
Well, Brian, thank you. And I hope, people will kind of read the paper. It's not intended to be what I call the roadmap necessarily, but it's intended to be what I call, where are the signs? And hopefully we can all begin to chart our own journeys here, whether we're, a national payer, a local payer, a regional payer. What we wanted to do was at least put out there what we're seeing in the industry, some of the flashing lights, some of the direction points. And like I said, it's going to take a lot of collaboration partnerships to be able to go through those guideposts, I think, very successfully. And very proud to be a part of it, very proud of what we're doing at KPMG. And I'm really excited about, seeing 2030 maybe in a whole different set of lenses. And it's going to be because of the hard work that we're seeing in the next certainly 18 to 24 months.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.